Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, folks, you're listening to The Hang, hosted by the Broadway Podcast Network. In this episode, I chat and reminisce with another member of the Les Mis alumni and current West End Phantom, Killian Donnelly. I always love hanging with Killian as his energy and humor is so infectious. He is truly one of the funniest guys I know. This hang really shows how diverse and crazy the life of an actor can be, from appearing alongside Sir Ian McKellen to performing at the Oscars or simply flying home to Ireland to be dad. Killian has done it all. Hope you enjoy.
Killian Donnelly, welcome to the hang.
Yay!
High five.
Now we've started. Now we've started.
Well, I feel like we did all our best bits before they said rolling.
Every we just had a conversation and everything was like, will we save this for the podcast? Yes, we'll save this. So now we've started.
Now we start.
I was really excited to be on this, by the way. Because I've texted you and told you I'm listening. I am a fan of this. It was yourself and Hadley having a conversation.
I remember.
And it was the most inspiring thing ever, because you can be heading to a show, or I listened to a lot of it in lockdown. And you know yourself how it was. If you want to kill an hour in lockdown, go for a walk. But just listen to, yeah, I suffered from that with my voice and I suffered from that. And when you hear people who inspire you talking about that sort of thing, it's yeah, it builds up your confidence. It's really nice. So when you gave me a call for this, I was like, yes! Yes, let's do it.
Oh, come on.
Honestly, really, really.
Well, I have to say, I know what you mean. When you hear other people who go through the same trials and tribulations, it validates you thinking, oh, I am on the right path. Oh, I am human. Yeah. This is okay. But I never thought this podcast would do that. So that meant a lot to me when you did reach out, because I was thinking, maybe I should stop doing it.
No.
But I always do that. As artists, I don't know, sometimes you get on stage, you're like, what am I doing?
But here's the thing that I wanted to ask you, because when you start with a podcast like this, it probably doesn't pick up until a few episodes or even a few years down the line that suddenly people discover it. Because I didn't know about it, and you were on like season 2 or something like that. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. I started listening, and you go through all the people. So that's what grabbed me. I was like, how long have you been doing this? Oh, yeah, I was thinking of, you know, knocking it on the head, but we're going to do it. I was like, keep doing it. Earl Carpenter's one was brilliant.
Oh,
that was brilliant.
He was so open and honest. Mm. And I think we definitely want to bring him back, and he wants to dive more into that. But, you know, I look up to Earl, as I'm sure you do, his resume. You know.
Well, Earl was my second Phantom, because I did... Will we talk about Phantom? Will we just go straight in?
You can. There's no rhyme and reason with this.
Oh, great. Okay.
You've heard the show.
So Earl was my second Phantom. So I did Raoul in 2010. What a great year. It was the 25th year. Okay. You'll probably be familiar with it, because you did a little gig in the Royal Albert Hall.
What was that for the 25th?
But I was Raoul in town at Her Majesty's. And I started with John, Owen Jones. And he was finishing... I think a contract, so I only had him for 3 months. Mm-hmm. Then Earl Carpenter took over for 6 months. Then we went to the Royal Albert Hall and we had you. Then I came back to Peter Yoback to finish out my year.
Oh,
so
that's beautiful.
Isn't it? So watching their music of the nights from the wings, Christine, Angel, take my jacket. I'm going to just watch The Journey and I'm going to watch Music of the Night. But it was amazing to see how everyone did it completely different. Mm-hmm. So my Phantom is like a Nutribullet of the 4V. He's going, oh, you did that. Oh, that's good. I'll take that. And it is amazing to see from the wings how the audience's reaction at different times. Earl was a master of stopping everything silent.
Yeah.
Stopping everything, and we all hung on to his in-breath. And we all breathed with him. That was such a lesson of how he did that.
He's super brave on stage, and he's a master of his craft. And he's, you know, it shows, his experience shows he's done a ton of work.
Mm. There's a great confidence there. I was given the Phantom had that gorgeous tradition of saying goodbye to people, and you would all meet in a dressing room and someone would do a speech and say farewell to them. And someone came in, will you do Earl's speech? I was like, yeah, I'd love to. So we all piled into his dressing room, the Phantom. We all just rocked in. He was like, what's happening?
Out of my room.
We all stood. But it was amazing because I said, I've always said, if you want a lesson in acting, buy a ticket to see Earl Carpenter. Because he was my first Javert, my first ever job. In 2007, I think, was Les Mis, and Earl was Javert. His stars from the wings. It was a lesson in just deliver the text.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to move. You don't have to look angry. You don't have to bang a table when you want to make a point. Just deliver the text and hold the eye contact with the audience. It reminded me of Billy Elliot, where I was the brother, Tony,
mm-hmm.
and the associate director, Julian Weber, who has directed it with Stephen Daldry since the start, he was doing a scene where I'm shouting at the coach because she's been taking Billy for lessons. And there's this amazing scene and I just have to deliver it. And he taught me, when you've got a big, long monologue, allow for the previous thought to fire the next thought. So if you and I are in an argument, you get really angry and you're trying to think of the next thing. And also, why have you got that? And also, another thing. And you have to build and build and build and build. But it doesn't mean that there's necessarily going to be a climax, a moment. It's just you're panicking and you're panicking. And he taught me that great lesson. And I did it and I did it and I did it and I did it. And I banged the table. And he went, oh, you ruined it. I went, what? You ruined it. You banged the table. Yeah, because I'm angry. Yeah. But you would have held us if you hadn't have banged that table, because we just would have hung on to your every word. But the moment you banged that table, we all went, ah, oh, he's angry. He lost us. He's lost our respect because he banged the table. It was such an amazing lesson. Earl always did that. Earl always held eye contact and stares. He would just stare at the audience. He wouldn't like bang the truncheon. He wouldn't have to move around.
No.
He would just focus. Oh my God, it was amazing. Amazing.
I feel like I should have had Earl Carpenter on this podcast.
He'll waffle about me. Well, were you well, Killian? He probably mentioned me a lot, did you? Not once.
He didn't. That's interesting because you and I have similar stories. When I was Raoul, Earl was my Phantom, and I would watch from the wings. And I was thinking the very similar thoughts, just how brave he was and how comfortable he was in his skin, in the Phantom skin.
Mm.
Would you watch thinking, I want to do that?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I was Andrus, or I was a swing at the start, which was the best training I've ever had. People always ask me, where did you train? And I go, Les Mis, basically, because I never professionally trained. It was Les Mis. Built up my voice, built up my confidence, and playing a character to a character to a character. And, oh, you're Fooey tonight. Oh, you're Kofarak tonight. Oh, you're Comfair tonight. Just changing every night. And I'd constantly make it the route to go down and watch stars. And yeah, it was incredible just to see, like, he's not moving. Other Javerts would come in, understudies would go on, and they'd do an incredible job, but I was like, they're moving. They're moving, they're going. There was a lot of that, and I still think there is, where I've been an understudy and I've gone, oh, he does this and he walks to the left, so will I walk to the right? Oh, he doesn't put his foot in the chair. Maybe I'll put my foot in the chair. And I'm thinking, that's the wrong way to be thinking.
Yeah.
David Thaxton was my Andrus, and I was his understudy. And he was incredible. So I just went, right, I'm just going to copy what he does, because it's perfect.
Well, he's another one who's very, and I say this in the most complimentary way, economical with his energy and physicality on stage, because he's brave.
Mm. Less is more.
Yeah.
But he's another student of the Earls and the Johns. because right. he would have watched them from the, I'd go down to watch in the wings and he'd be already there.
So, I loved watching from the wings. I remember stage management, Les Mis, goes, do you ever go to your dressing room? I'm like, what am I going to learn in there?
Yeah. Yeah. What a free education we had.
Yeah.
And it was one of the few shows, I've been lucky to do a few, but it was one of them where people go, are you not bored of watching it every night? No. No, you can't possibly. It's like Pulp Fiction because there's so many different little stories going on.
Yeah.
And then an understudy would go on. And then you change tracks, especially being a swing.
Yeah.
I remember we had so many people off when we revolved into the ABC Cafe. There was Thacko and me.
It's a private school.
And two guys ran in. So there was four of us. No, there was Thacko, me and Grantaire. But I remember Grantaire went, we're going to lose.
I remember of some, because there would be days, you think COVID keeps people off now. Back then, I'm like, we had more people off before COVID.
Yeah.
So once, you know, you at the barricade, listen to this. Now, sometimes if there was no offstage swing, one of the students would be on there and then come on later, right?
Yeah.
So it sat there. Nothing. And you see one of the students, fuck, goes off and all hears, own, you have no friends. I was like, you should have just left it.
So here, like, I pulled a prank on Earl and you can ask him about this and he didn't like it. Rightfully so, but it was his last day. So we were like on the last matinee, I was like, oh, what we do? So I said, I'm not going to show up for the warnings. I'm not going to show up. So Earl is standing there ready to go on as Javert. So he'll have to do it. But he did like the 10th anniversary timing. So it was very good. You at the barricade, listen to this. No one is coming. He was like, you at the barricade, listen to this. No one is coming. I was like, oh
no.
And he went, I didn't like that. Yeah, I'm really, really sorry. I'm gonna never happen again. One of those things where this'll be a brilliant idea, right? Yeah. Why isn't anyone answering me? I'm going to do it anyway. Yeah.
One night in the attack on Rue Plumet, is that with the Thénardiers?
Mm.
This is hilarious. He knew all fucking around.
Yeah.
I'm watching from the wings and I'm thinking, where's Thénardier? So Troy Sussman, Aussie actor who was in the cast, I think was on, he was one of the gang members, but he was a Thénardier understudy. So he had the thought, well, I'll just start doing his lines and make it like a gang.
Yeah.
But he was thinking so moment by moment, he forgot his
own Bobby lines.
That he's about to do his lines. What do I care? Who you should rob? Give me my shirt. Give me the job. Or whatever the lines are. And then you shut your mouth.
He's answering himself.
So he has having like a schizophrenic attack on stage. But at that point, he's like, I've committed, but I got to do all the lines now. I thought, look at him. What a nutter.
I had, because I was a swing, you had some business where you had to get rid of the rifles. You had to pretend to be hitting and you had to pass them down to stage management. And I would, because we were so down, I had to get all the rifles. So I looked like a gun runner just running around going, ah, come on, they're fighting. Give me your rifle. Come on, they're fighting. Give me your rifle. Get her a rifle. I was just handing the rifle. Anyone in the audience would be like, why'd you get rid of the guns? That's not how you win a war. We did a gun running thing because I did the Les Mis movie. And I remember it was a brilliant lesson in when you film and then you watch it and you go, oh, they've cut it. It was a brilliant lesson because we did a whole day, myself, Fra, Fee, and Gabriel Vic, I think it was, and we did a gun running scene where did the students get the rifles and the guns from? So it was like us stealing them off the back of a car while someone's distracting. And that was to play during did it, and then we ran up Rue Plumet and just running through all the cobbled streets, and then we'd slam all the rifles and fold open this bag which had all the rifles. At Notre Dame, the sections are prepared. And we're like, this is going to be amazing. Went to Leicester Square and we're watching it and we're beside each other nudging. Here it comes. The time is near. Oh, they've cut the whole thing. They cut the whole opening lines. And you just get Andres going, the time is near. We're like, ah, they cut it. We're cut. There I am.
It'll be on the director's cut.
Yeah.
No, they're smart.
About 6 hours long. Don't worry, we'll be in it, guys.
Can we get that for our self tape at least, for our show reel? So, man, we jumped right in with all these stories, but I want to backtrack a little. Mm. So we're very much from the same school of learn on the job.
Yeah, learn by doing.
And like myself, Colm Wilkinson was your guy.
Yeah,
he was. Your dad got you a CD.
Yeah, he was.
Bring Him Home and Music of the Night.
Yep.
What, at that point, was singing music in your life? In your heart?
Yeah, music was definitely in the family. Mom sang, dad sang. Mom led a choir at the local church. Dad played guitar. There was two guitars and a broken piano in the front room, and we called it the music room. Mm-hmm. We were never told to shut up singing. That was the thing. You could sing all the time in our house. It was never like, will you stop singing? There was never any of that. So there was always music. And that sort of... I'd like have slagging matches with my dad because he'd play Vince Gill or John Denver. And I go, that guy can't sing. Listen to his voice. And he goes, no, listen to the lyrics, son. Mm. Listen to what he's saying. That's Annie's song. Or listen to this voice and listen to why that violin comes in there when his voice elevates to there. And that started changing. Oh, wow. Dad knew all of that stuff. And Colm Wilkinson, Stage Heroes. And he just slides it across and he goes, track 7. Boom, 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 boom. And you just heard that falsetto voice for the first time. And I was like, what is this? And of course, CDs back, play it again, play it again, play it again, over and over and over again. And that was my, what is this? And it was Mam who said, that's a show called Les Miserables. It's on in London at the moment. And I was like, I need to hear the rest of it. And it's amazing where that changed everything. But sport was a huge thing in my school. There's an Irish game called hurling, which is kind of like camogie. And it's actually the fastest sport with a ball in the world, hurling. Right. Something like that. But they have sticks. And where I grew up, like, people came out of the womb holding a hurley, and that's how it was. And I just wasn't interested in it. So, but you couldn't be like, "Why? What football team do you support?" I want to sing. It wasn't that. So in school, I remember I'd always lie. Our geography teacher would take a roll call. So, Sean, here, sir. And who do you support? Manchester United, sir. Oh, hard luck last weekend. Killian, here, sir. And who do you support? Liverpool. Oh, right. Are you looking forward to next weekend? Am I? We're going to score those football goals?
Yes.
But it was just music, music, music. But in our school, you had to hang on after school to do music.
Right.
So I was like, I'm not waiting. I'm going home. It was never in the curriculum, which I think now it is. But it was art and theatre was from my Amdram, the local amateur musical society.
Wasn't that the funnest time, though?
Mm. Built up my confidence. I was like able to talk to people. I think it was because I saw sport and the football lovers as football, musicals. What are you doing musicals for? Yeah. And then when I got into an Amdram, suddenly there were these beer-bellied bald men with pints going, did you ever hear Jesus Christ Superstar in 1976? I was like, oh, did I? Oh my God, Colm Wilkinson's amazing, isn't he?
Well, back then it was CT Wilkinson.
It was CT.
Yes.
And to this day, my dad still refers to him as CT as if they're best mates.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUPS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUPS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at supsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Do you want to hear a great story? So Colm Wilkinson was playing at the Bord Gáis, which is like the big theatre in Dublin. And I got myself and my dad tickets. And we knew his manager. And it's just one of those beautiful Irish moments. My dad's watching Colm Wilkinson. He goes, "Jase, there's Jimmy Smith on guitar." And I went, "What? Jimmy Smith, yeah. Who's Jimmy Smith? Yeah, he lives across the road." Like, I was like, "Oh my God, what? Dad?" So I texted the manager. And he said, "Yeah, come in back and you can say hello to Colm afterwards." I was like, "Oh, amazing." The place, the green room of the Bord Gáis was packed. So Colm had just done a show and he's not going to be talking to everyone. I was like, "Dad, we'll just shake his hand, say well done and we'll move on." "I want to talk to him." Not that, like, "Dad, he's just done. I'm saying hello to Colm." And everyone in that room, "Hi, Colm, we saw you in Les Miserables at the Point. You were amazing." "Oh, thanks very much." "Hi, Colm, Les Miserables, we saw it. 1999, you played Valjean." "Oh, we saw it at the Point."
And your father was insisting that, "I want to talk to Colm."
"Yeah, I want to talk to Colm. I'm going to say hello to him. Just say, well done, really enjoyed the concert and we'll go. He's probably going to rest his voice. He's not going to talk much." My dad had seen Colm when Colm wasn't Colm Wilkinson. He was doing the pub runs. He was doing the gigs with the guitar. And I can't remember the guy he used to sing with, but let's say John Riley. And he came up and I went, "Hi, Colm, I'm Killian. I've met you before." "Oh, Killian, yeah, hi, how are you? This is my father. He introduced me to your music." "Colm, I saw you in Old Ned's pub and you were with John Riley." And Colm went, "Oh my God, that was like what, 72, 74? It was 75. And you got up on the bass bins at the end and you were playing the Banks. Oh my God, we always finished with the Banks. Oh, that's going back." The arms folded. The two of them had this amazing conversation. And then he went on to the next people. "Hi, Colm, we saw you in the Point. It was brilliant." And I was like, "Yes, Dad. Yes, Dad."
That must have been so refreshing for Colm.
Yeah. And you just see the man, because he must know that how people see him and he must get it all the time, but he's so humble, he's so pleasant, and it's incredible. It's incredible to see the man actually come out going, "Oh, we used to do that. We used to actually be there every month and it was on the third Friday of the summer." "Yeah, we'd go and see you every Friday." And I loved it. I was like, "Yes, Dad." But Dad got me into all that music and he came over to see me when I was in Les Mis over and over and over again. Like, proud of himself that he goes, "I've seen it 36 times. And it's like, "Oh, get a life. Oh my God, Dad, go see something else. And he would go and he'd go, "I'd go to see that matinee and then I'd go in that night as well." I go, "You're not going to see it. I want to see Les Mis. I've gotten you a ticket to Jersey Boys." "I don't want to see, I don't know it. I've never seen it." "Just go and see another show other than Les Mis." And he'd go see Jersey Boys, be at our stage door afterwards. And I go, "Well, geez, that's the most amazing thing. I'd go and see that tomorrow now." It's like, "That, so go see shows, Dad." "Oh, don't get me a ticket to Mary Poppins." "Oh, it's absolutely brilliant. She flies. She flew over me head." And it's brilliant.
Did, because you've had a nice reign with Les Mis with many parts, whether it's covering or doing them. So Enjolras, Javert, you've been on for.
Yeah.
You've played Valjean.
Yeah.
And so, all the students. So has your dad seen all those?
Oh, yeah. Every single one. And Mom would ring me and go, "Are you on tonight?" I go, "Yeah, I'm on tonight." "Who are you on for?" It's pointless you asking what character in Les Miserables I'm on for, but I'll tell you. Brujon. "Liam, he's on for Brujon." "What is it?" "Brujon." "Brujon." "Oh, yeah, very good." They wouldn't know who it is. And then tomorrow I'm on for Kofarak. "Oh, wow. What? Say that again for me?" Pointless. He's just one of the students. Don't worry about it, man. But they'd love to come over and love to see it. And they're sort of...
How did your dad feel when he heard you do Bring Him Home for the first time?
Dad, when did Dad see me do it? I think Dad didn't see me until I was playing the role, possibly in Ireland. He would have heard me singing at concerts.
Of course you did in Ireland as well on that tour.
Yeah. So I was doing the original in London. And the new, as they call it, production was going out on tour in 2019. And I was like, I want to do that tour. I want to do the new version. Mm-hmm. And you know, as a working actor, if I come across as a good Valjean and I have that direction under my belt, I can help them out if, hey, it's going to Dubai for 6 weeks. Will you jump in and do Valjean? So it's that sort of a thing was where my head was at. But then they turned around and said, it's in Dublin for 6 weeks for Christmas. And the last person to play Valjean in Dublin was Colin Wilkinson. I was like, I have to do it. I have to do it. So I got one of these lovely messages going, Cameron would like to take you out to dinner. And I was like, what? What are we going to talk about?
That's exactly what my thought.
What? Will I do that voice I do? Hey, how are you? Will I be me? And immediately he just set the bar of everything was relaxed, everything was chilled. And we talked about everything but Les Mis.
Awesome.
Family. And exactly as you said, where did I start? And I asked him what got him into it. And he wasn't just being pleasant. He was answering my questions and talking. And it was just one of the most amazing, amazing dinners. And a week later, I get the offer and I accept. And I had never seen like the UK. I'd been living in London for 12, 13 years, but I'd actually never gone as far as like Liverpool or certainly Edinburgh. And yeah, I wanted to do a tour and I wanted to do it. And it was the most incredible experience getting to sit down in 6 weeks in venues. I had a dog with me. So I took the dog with me on tour, walking beaches and everything. It was just incredible.
I think I would prefer touring England than a West End run.
Yeah.
Given a choice, if they're both like the same role maybe, England's got some beautiful spots. And of course, you're going on privileged conditions. You've seen... You're well taken care of, but you see some great places.
Unbelievable. Plymouth was the most beautiful place.
Eastbourne?
Yeah.
No, Eastbourne's great.
Where did we go?
Oh, Plymouth, yeah. Or you go to like, I don't know, we were obviously Les Mis, I don't think can fit in Bath, but you go to
Do you want to hear a great story?
I do.
Okay. Strap in. We're in Newcastle. And
A city.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And you know when someone's in? Oh, someone's in. Apparently someone's in. And at the start of Les Mis, we're rowing. And Lee Ormsby is beside me, rowing with me.
How funny is Lee Ormsby?
Well, here's the perfect example. Have a good show. Yeah, have a good show. Okay, getting into my Valjean-y bits. Here we go. Ooh, I'm Valjean, about to row. Here we go. So Ian McKellen is in. What? Bomb, bomb. And I'm like, what? Is he in? Where's he at? And then there's these line of boxes in Newcastle in the theatre. And we're like, that's where he is. So we're all performing to here.
Brilliant.
He's actually here.
Nice.
We only find out at the bows. We're like, oh, we were way off. Who's that? That got the whole show. He comes backstage, gives me a massive hug.
Oh.
And I wish I was as well educated as that man on theatre, because he gives me a hug and he goes, oh, and of course, Frank Mitchum. And I went, yeah. And he's the designer, the architect of he's the designer of the theatre.
Right.
So he's saying, yeah, worked. So I went, yeah, it's beautiful. And my arms around him, and I was like, this is Harry McKellen, this is amazing. It wasn't until I go home, come in the next day, he's at our warm-up. He's doing yoga with all the cast, doing their warm-up, jumping jacks, and I'm going, what's he doing here?
Since when does Les Mis do physical warm-ups?
Well, we do it now for the new one.
All right, okay.
So he's doing the warm-up, and we're doing the vocal warm-up, and I was like, what is happening? And Nick Greenshields, legend, was Javert. And he goes, he's in it today. I was like, what? He's in it. They all went out last night and he's in it. They had all gone out with him to the pub across the road and they said, you know, Dame Judi Dench was in the show.
That's
just
right.
For 40, 45 minutes. Well, if Judy did it, I'm fucking doing it. And then he comes and what he set himself up as a character called Hugo Victor.
Yep.
Had an eye patch.
Brilliant.
And
just blends in.
Did the barricade. He was the oldest member of the barricade. He lifted a barrel, he sat there, and he was all the way up until Bring Him Home, and then let all the women and fathers go. He left. So he did the barricade. Just for one matinee, no one knew it. It was incredible.
I've never heard that story.
It was incredible. Absolutely incredible. So he's been in Les Mis, and he sent us all, and he was on the next night with his one-man show, and he invited us all to just sit in the wings and watch his show.
Didn't give you a seat.
Rude. was like, we gave you a seat, we gave you a dressing room,
we gave you a show. You can sit in the wings if you want. Cheers, mate.
But incredible. And the most amazing thing was how respectful he was, where I was the leading man. So I get a knock on the door. Hello, good house tonight. I had just done the soliloquy and was off and waiting to go on for Thénardier's Inn. Good house tonight? I was like, yeah, it's incredible. Okay, you sound amazing. And thank you. I'm very, really looking forward to doing the show. I was like, yeah, no, we're so happy to have you here.
Yeah, but Ian, I'm in a quick change right now. So if you don't mind just
giving it that. All right. Where am I signing? It was beautiful. Really, really beautiful.
That's amazing.
Yeah, great lesson.
Amazing. Hey, how tall is Nick Greenshields again?
I want to say 6'7". 6'6 or 6'7".
Because he was a standby Phantom when I was Phantom.
Yes.
And do you ever get that like, oh, I saw Phantom when you were there? I was like, are you sure you saw me?
Yeah.
I said, was I very tall? No, you saw me then.
Yeah. I get people purposely telling me when I wasn't there.
Brilliant.
We went to see you in Dublin, in Les Mis, but you weren't on. Then you didn't see me. Yeah, but we went to see you, but you weren't there.
I love that when you like, if you tweet, I'm doing this concert on such and such date, and the comment will be, I'm not coming. I can't make it. Okay.
Sorry about that, but I always do it for the fun. that's me. I'm not going, Ramin.
Okay. I'll look out for that.
Can I have a seat or am I watching from the wings?
But with Nick, I ask about his height because as people who do know him, he's extremely tall, phenomenal talent, killer voice. Mm. Have you seen his fan kick?
Oh, yes, I have.
It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Whack.
It's like a wind turbine. Like, you feel the wind, but yeah. It's straight. It's right up there. I was like, do that again.
He did it dressed as Javert for me because he knows my missus. They work together. And she actually said, ask him for that kick. I said, apparently you do a kick. He's like, oh, all right. Whack. I was like, whoa. And he, oh, I think I ripped something. It's amazing. Incredible.
So let me see the time here. Okay, we still got time. So where did you grow up in Ireland?
I grew up in a place called Meath, which when people ask me, where am I from? I go Meath and I go, it's right beside Dublin. And it is. It's like a 30-35 minute drive from Dublin, but it was the countryside. It was, my father didn't want us growing up in a city because he didn't like the city. He grew up in the city and he mm-hmm. didn't like it. So he wanted to move out to the countryside where, as my mom says, we'd leave the 1st of June. On the holidays, the kids were on holidays from school. She goes, the 1st of June, yous would go out the door and I felt I wouldn't see yous till August because yous would just play. Climb trees. We had fields beside us. We'd go walking across fields with the dogs. We'd come back. Like, it was just the most incredible, incredible summers. Now I live in the city and I've lived in New York. And what are you doing with your day off? Oh, I'd like to go for a walk. Well, you can go to the walking area in Central Park. So you go to that area where everyone is just walking, where there was such a sense of freedom in the countryside.
Yeah.
And that's where you could sing. Like there was this monastery called Bective Abbey. Monks were there in like 409 AD. But we used to play army or hide and seek or chasing when we were kids. But we used to sing, and the cloisters area, the echo and the reverb was just amazing. So we would sing, like I'd be one end and my friend Barry would be the other, and we'd sing to each other, really singing these massive, massive things. It was incredible. That was our backyard.
See, life and imagination before cell phones and social media.
Yeah, 100%. We made do, as my mom said. Yeah, it was really, really amazing. I miss it. And now I have a kid. And now I'm going, I'd love him to just, because he loves to run. You put him down and he's gone. So we try and find closed in areas and he just runs and runs, and you put a football in there but he wants to pick a flower. You hold that and he runs and picks another flower. It's like, have you ever played Mario Brothers? Way back.
Dude, that's not even our garden, so.
pronounce my son's name.
Well, how do you spell it?
T-A-D-H-G. So.
I think you spelled it wrong.
So, your name is Ramin.
Correct.
What do people call you, though, other than Ramin?
Marine,
okay.
Ramin.
Okay. Killian, Kelvin, Klein, Killine. I get all the different versions of my name. So when I finally go, it's Killian, in auditions or anything. Killian. Oh, it's a lovely name. Killian. That's how you pronounce it? Killian. So for the rest of the day on their casting, I'm known as Killian. not such and such. I don't get hidden by a Dave or a John. I'm Killian. So it already stands out. So I was like, oh, I'd love to give him an Irish name, but I'd love it to stand out. So everyone always asks me, how do you pronounce his name? And once they know, they know. And it's Tig. It's like a tie you wear and put a G at the end. Tig.
Beautiful.
So the D and the H, it means philosopher and poet, all these things. Oh, but we were literally Google, what about such and such now? What about such and such? Tig. Tig Donnelly. Oh, that's pretty cool.
Oh, so, that but it boy works is when set up.
When you're screaming at him, Tig! It's perfect for
Tig.
Him.
Tig! Dad, I want to be an accountant. No, you don't. Not with a name like Tig.
Yeah, it's cool. So that's where it comes from, yeah.
How old is he now?
Tig is, what day is it today? 19 months.
Oh, May, not even 2 years.
So you know when you get the, this was you last year?
Yeah.
On your phone or something like that. He's a baba and he's in my arms and I'm like, oh my God. But now he is mobile and racing around the place.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
How has that transition been, being an actor as a father with a youngin' now?
Well, I would look up to the likes of you. I would look up to Hadley. I would be in a show and I go, if you can do a West End show or a tour or be a working, jobbing actor and support a family, that's the most incredible thing ever. Because I'd always be like, oh, maybe I wouldn't be able to do it. But having conversations, go, look, if you're going to be a father, if you want to be a father, and the rest, you sort of find it being an actor. It just happens. We were 3 weeks on the Phantom Tour and it closed due to COVID. March 16th, we closed. Tig was born April 17th, so a month later. And so I got the first 18 months of Tig. It was beautiful. So I had Louise for a month pregnant. Then he came, and in Ireland, you weren't allowed to go 2 kilometres from your house. So it was just the three of us. And everyone has said who's had kids, they go, that's actually really nice, because when your child goes for a nap, you want to relax. But 9 times out of 10, people are coming over to see the baby, mm-hmm. and you're making tea and you're making food and you're being a nice host, but your child is sleeping. No one could be there. So we got time for ourselves, time as a family. We'd walk around. It was really, really special. And I miss that moment. We'd always talk about, oh, wouldn't it just be lovely to go back to when he was just a baba and it was just the three of us. Mm. Yeah, a lot of people say, oh, I miss those moments. I never get that. It's been hard because they're at home in Dublin and I'm over here for Phantom.
Are they?
So they came over for the summer and Louise is working there. So it was never going to be a thing, right, daddy works and mammy stopped working. It was always going to be, no, you keep working and we make it work. So we've a house in Dublin and I have a place here. So I'm going back every Tuesday as our day off. So I go back every Tuesday and I'm back every Wednesday.
Holy shit.
And people say holy shit, but if I get a 9 a.m. flight, I'm in my house for 10:30.
Perfect.
So it's, we live close to the airport because Dublin's tiny. We live 10 minutes from her parents. So there's all the babysitters. And I think after 18 months, when you get a phone call going, look, they'd like to offer you a Phantom in the West End, you're like, I'm 100% doing it.
Yeah,
100% doing it. And Louise was the one, you need to do it. But also financially, we're like, we need money. Because he's selfish and likes to eat every day.
Freeloaders.
Every day.
My kid's 17 years old. Get out. Go get a career.
Go get a career.
Dad, I'm 14. Get a career.
We can call you Tig for nothing, okay?
Exactly.
Do something with it.
Yeah. Shouldn't have called him Jaden. Damn it.
But yeah, but that's it. It's, yeah, it's there's so many hard days, usually a Thursday or a Friday, because I see them on a Wednesday, but I'm going back to work. The Thursday or the Friday is the lonely day. Two shows on a Saturday, you're just busy doing it, and she's working. But the Friday is like, Louise is off, so she's just playing with them, and they're out in a park or they're out by the beach, and I'm like, oh,
I'm really
getting
that FaceTime call that doesn't have great reception. Can you hear me? Yeah, I can hear it.
Yeah. Oh, but it's the chin.
Yeah.
You okay? Can I just see him? Yeah, hang on. Tig. And he's on the back of the couch watching Moana. Yeah. All right, cool.
Right. We've checked in.
I'll call later. It's that. And he's nearly two, and the terrible twos are like, everything's a moan.
I know.
Everything's a moan.
Yeah.
So I'm delighted I'm here. That's really bad.
No, but at least now when you do see him, it's like quality time, and then it's phantom time.
Yeah. And it's amazing. Like, Louise goes to the park with him at about when I land. So I meet them in the park, and there is that magical movie moment where he's like running over to Dada. Man. Yeah, it's cool.
And by that time, he's ready for a nap.
Yeah. And am I? Hang on. Right. I hugged him. I'm over a nap. I know, it's brilliant. It's amazing. But they've been over here. So when Louise gets, she teaches in a stage school in Ireland. So when she gets holidays, she gets like a week and a half off. She comes over here with him. And he's been on like four or five flights now. 6 episodes of Fireman Sam and a few snacks. He just sits on Mammy's lap and 45 minutes is the flight and they're here. It's bliss.
Sounds like you're getting a good balance of both worlds. You know?
Yeah. It's really cool. It's that thing of let's just live in the now rather than, well, what are we going to do in 5 years? I've never been like that. It's always been an email comes through, you're doing this promo, you're doing this, you're doing Phantom. Oh wow, amazing. Okay. It's always that. I go from day to day, week to week, and with family it's been like that, and it's working beautifully.
And it, as you said, it just falls into place. You're a good guy, you work hard, it's what we signed up to do. That doesn't have to stop, and it's just you adjust with things that come in your way, and you know, you add to your family, and that's, you know, we're not the first actors to do that.
I know. And that's the thing. That's why it was, I'd always ask people, how's your kids? So, yeah, we're looking for a school for them at the moment. And like they're dressing, putting on tights as Thénardier. I was like, wow, incredible. And I'm working with Adam Lindstedt, who's the most incredible actor. He plays Andre, and he has a 5-year-old, and our 5 or 6-year-old Rory came to see the show last night. But you'd see Adam was like, hey, he's in watching. And he texts me at the interval saying, the Phantom is so cool. I was like, oh, amazing. Things like that are incredible. Because now I think, oh, Tiggy will get to see Daddy on stage. That'll be amazing. And he might be like, useless. And he went flat there, Dad. All right. Go pick flowers.
Yeah. Get out of here, kid.
Tiggy.
Oh, we're going to wrap up soon. But do you remember, can you believe we performed at the Oscars?
Oh, again, day to day, week to week. My agent rings me and goes, this might be happening, but it's probably not happening, but it might be happening. Well, what is it? I can't tell you, but you need to fill out a visa and all these forms and then head to the American embassy and all. I was like, okay. And I arrive and there's all the lads. I was like, hey, how's it going? We fill out forms. And that's when a representative from Cameron's tells us, okay, it's to sing at the Oscars. We're like, what? Okay, okay, you'll be working for 2 days and we're sending you to LA for 10 days. We're like, okay. And I'll never forget, we checked into the W Hotel in LA. And they went, okay, welcome. We just need to put a $700 deposit. And we were like, we don't have $700 on each of our cards. So we're there like sending money. Can we have the Wi-Fi code? Because we have to send money over. And we got $700 as a holding. And then we were there and... yeah, it was just the most incredible day.
I remember in Capitol Studios where we were rehearsing at the recording studio.
Yeah.
Laughing all the time. It was so much fun. And then I remember, make sure you leave your music when you leave the room. No problem. You and I go to the washroom. And I'm like, and you're like, what's that? I'm like, the music. It's still in my hands. You're like, oh. Ramin, did you give the music?
Yes, sir. No bother.
I remember looking in another room and there was Seth MacFarlane learning a dance. And I was like, oh, that's amazing. We did 2 days, and then as we performed, do you remember Seth came off stage and you and I spoke to him?
Yeah.
And he came off and I went, well done, it's going really well. Thinking he'd just go, thanks. But he turned around and he went, really? And then you just took over and you went, man, it's so good. That opening with Shatner was brilliant. And I was like, his opening with Shatner was very good. I was just trying to repeat.
This is Killian. He's had a good day. He's seen a bus.
Yeah. Very good. You're so talented, man.
I remember coming off stage and there was Jamie Foxx. I just come around the corner. He's like, dude, that was awesome. I'm like, Jamie Foxx.
Yes. Yes, when we were rehearsing as well, I remember over the God mic, you could hear, okay, can you move a bit to your left, Killian? Who's in front of you? Bradley Cooper. Okay, because their headshots were in the chairs in rehearsals. Okay, move further to your left. Who have you got now? Jennifer Lawrence. And behind her, Robert De Niro. Okay, is that okay for you? That's your eye line. I was like, that's absolutely fine. That's absolutely fine. But a huge influence to me and many is Steven Spielberg. And he was there with Lincoln and I could spot him over there.
Yeah.
I remember going, this is insane. Do you remember Cameron was walking up to the cameraman going, make sure you get, because he wanted, as much as the principals, all the ensemble scene as well.
Yeah.
He was there with a coffee, go, make sure you get him. And Ramin will come out and make sure the camera, and the cameraman was going, Who are you? I'm getting notes from my director. Pan there. And I, before the actual show, I stood where Hugh Jackman walks on. And I stood there and I was like, oh, I hope this goes well. And I just stood there and Hugh just went, are you? And I went, yeah, I'm on for you. It was a last minute change. And he went, oh, he just played with it. He went, oh, okay. Well, best of luck. I really wanted to do it. I know. But look, they said they need an unknown. They wanted me. So, okay, all right. What'll I do? You just hang back. Just hang back. All right, appreciate it. Get out of the way.
They were so nice. And I remember you were really close with Russell Crowe. And I guess you told him I jam and play music too. Yeah. And he walks over. I hear you play music. I said, I try. And he goes, I'm staying at such and such hotel under such and such name. See you tonight. I was like, giddy up.
Yeah.
But I had to go on tour the next day. Yeah. So I couldn't make it. I'm at my hotel. You phone me. And you say, where are you, buddy? I said, oh, I'm packing. I got to go on tour. He's like, Russell's asking for you. I was like, my heart broke. I'm like, he gave a shit.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. And that was a massive sing-song that night.
I don't want to know.
It was amazing. It was cool. And you know, it was that thing, people got, Steve Guttenberg walked in the door.
Oh.
And I went, Mahoney! It was amazing. Natalie Imbruglia was there. It was just this incredible people sitting at a piano, playing some songs, having a jam. And he just whispers in my ear, you better get your party piece ready. And I was like, oh, I don't have a party, but you better get your party piece ready. And I sang this song called by a band called Five for Fighting, Superman It Ain't Easy. I can play it on guitar, piano. Did that. More. I was like, I've got one song. I don't have another song. Just play something. God on high. I was like, oh, God, how to kill a room to sing songs and bring them home. But they listened. They were lovely and applause. But that was the most incredible experience.
Yeah. Brother, I want to talk to you for ages. Will you come back at some point?
100%. Love to.
There's so many stories and I want to talk about how do you warm up? There's so much we'll get into. But I love your stories and I love your energy and I love you. I'm so glad we get to hang. Two real quick questions.
Yeah.
What made you smile yesterday?
My son, seeing my son on FaceTime.
Beautiful. And we've spoke about this, but first childhood memory that comes to your mind that makes you smile.
Oh, wow. It immediately went to seeing Jesus Christ Superstar when I was 11 years old. And I remember seeing, it was in Navan, and they had the harness under Judas and he was just there hanging. And I remember that image not being, oh, that's shocking, just being like, how do they do that? That's incredible. And just hearing, poor Judas. I was like, that was incredible.
Beautiful. Once a theatre kid, always a theatre kid.
Absolutely.
You looking forward to the Liverpool game this weekend?
I can't wait for them to score all those point goals. Touchdown!
Take care, brother.
You too, man. Thanks.
You've been listening to The Hang. I am Ramin Karimloo. The Hang is produced by Mercy Productions and Desert Highway and recorded at Soho Live Studios. Check out my new app. Go to ramin.fan.direct where you can find brand new content, giveaways, and exclusive news. Thanks for listening.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway, Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.